Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
What kind of other things have you done besides podcasts?
We run three AI companies. So one is EPUB.AI. We use artificial intelligence to create books using interviews to transcription to book using the AI.
Wow.
Freaking badass, right? Yeah.
Another, that's incredible.
I know, dude. It is incredible for real. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, we have a book done. So yeah, it's like a lot faster than what it used to be. Yeah. Another one is companyagent.AI. It's an agency that we use AI to get people clients. And the other one is prognostic.ai. And that's a psychoanalytical tool that allows you to analyze target audiences, probable outcomes with marketing campaigns, that kind of a thing.
Wow. And that stuff is really accurate, I guess.
It's spooky, man. It understands the psyche better than any human does, I think, because it's studied everything. It read every ounce of human writing online. So, I mean, it's amazing. It truly
now, is. Now, do you create the AI? I mean, do you write it? Or
not me personally. I'm a marketer, so my team does. And I'm just like, wow, I'm amazed every day with what they're doing. So, yeah.
That is something. Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's cool.
Thank you, man. Yeah, dude. So we'll get into what you do, brother. So tell me about yourself. What do you do? And most importantly, what do you love about what you do, man?
So, boy, I mean, I juggle a lot of things. So my daytime job is I'm an actor. That's been my daytime job for a little over 39 years now. And I do commercial modeling as well, which is modeling for, it's kind of the opposite of fashion modeling in the sense, don't do runways, don't do high-end designer clothes, but everything else. And so all the ads that you see in magazines and newspapers and brochures on packages, those are commercial models. Some people are beautiful and incredibly handsome. Not me. I'm like the regular kind of guy. But I use my acting skills to be able to show a variety of expressions and emotions in a believable way. So do that. Wrote a book, How to Become a Successful Actor and Model. So I'm always promoting that. Do lots of private mentoring virtually online, which is great. I've done over 800 workshops. Wow. Travel the world doing acting, modeling, industry-related workshops. You did ask, so I'm going through the list. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've got a great, and it's all free, a YouTube channel. Where it's an acting and modeling quick tips channel. And every week I upload a new industry video. And it's really, really helpful for people. There are over 400 videos there. And I also do similar things on my Instagram page. And I write. I write articles for lots of different publications, industry-related things. And so I'm busy with work, and I'm sure, like, you know, as a lot of people are, we're doing lots of different things. They're all interconnected, but there are lots of moving parts and different things. And these are things, what's interesting is that unlike a lot of successful business people who really strategize and plan things out, and within a year, I plan to be doing this, this, and this, my brain just doesn't work that way. And so I've never in my life done that. I always kind of go by feel and I listen and I keep my eyes and ears open. And when something pops up and I think, oh, well, that might be interesting to do, then I'll jump on it. And so, yeah, I do a lot of different things, but they're really enjoyable things for me.
Right on, man. Dude, one of the things that I want to get into with you is utilizing a persona in the business realm, because what you're a master at is, as an actor and as a model, is you're talking about utilizing a persona, stepping into a role and being able to embody that to do some sort of a task. So when it comes to stepping into a persona, let's say, well, you're teaching me, let's say I had to be you for a day and you get to be me for a day, and we're deciding exactly how to go about stepping into a business role, for example. How do I start to step into that with confidence, with gusto, so that I can have that persona that fits the role that I'm acting in this case, or playing the game as this role?
Yeah. So There are a couple different answers to what you're talking about. So with an actual role, an acting role, one of the things that I do is I try to figure out what's going on with my character. You know what? I always like to give specific examples that for me, I'm a visual person, and so when I actually can hear something instead of just talking in vague generalities, that doesn't help me. So, like for instance, I worked on there was a TV show many years ago. It was called House of Cards, and it was on Netflix. It was, I think, the first Netflix streaming show that they actually paid for. There
Wow.
was something before that that came to Netflix that streamed, but this was the first one they paid for. So the short version is, I got. You know what? Let me just back up one more second because I think people will find this interesting. I auditioned for that show, House of Cards, 14 times over 2 years.
Wow.
I kept going in, reading, never booking. Sometimes I would get a callback, meaning they were interested, and then they would bring two or three people in for the callback, wouldn't book it. And what I learned, because some actors, after a couple of auditions, not getting it, whether it's for the same project or with just the same casting director, they start getting into this headspace of, like, apparently the casting director doesn't like me. I mean, honestly, I don't know why I'm
Yeah,
wasting my time
they take
here.
it personally.
They
Yeah.
take it personally and they start thinking, they don't want me. Why do they keep, why do they keep doing this? So what I learned pretty early on is a casting director will not bring you in a second time unless they really liked what you did. And there are a million and one reasons why you book a job and don't book a job. So kind of in relation to some of the things that you do, for people who are selling things, in some ways it's easier. If I'm selling computers and I knock on somebody's door and I say, "Hey, look, I'm selling Macs," and they say, "You know what? I'm really a PC person." You go, "Okay, I get it. Something personal. I understand." But for us, and maybe some other types of salespeople, what they're saying is, "I don't want you." And that's a very different place to be in. And
Yeah.
it is so crucial. And this took me a long time to figure out that you can't take anything personally in this industry. These are all business decisions. For whatever reason, those other, those 14 times, it's like I didn't fit the right clothes. Maybe I reminded the director of her ex-husband who she hates.
Yeah.
Maybe I was too tall. Maybe I wasn't tall enough. Maybe I looked too much like the principal actors that I would have a scene. Who knows? So the important thing is not to take things personally. Getting back to House of Cards. So for this particular one, I was playing the caretaker. My name was Michael in the show. Of Ellen Burstyn. Most people wouldn't know. Ellen Burstyn is a phenomenal actor, Academy Award-winning actor. She's, I think, 90 now. She's just amazing. And it was a very tricky role because she played the mother of the president's wife and Robin Wright. And I had scenes with both Ellen Burstyn and Robin Wright. And the tricky part was I had to be very respectful of Robin Wright. She's the president's wife. And on the other hand, I have to be protective of this woman who I care about, this woman I take care of, Ellen Burstyn. And so there was always this fine line of being respectful, but also standing up. So it was a, it wasn't like a major role. I was only in three episodes. But it was a complicated one. So in that sense, I really had to spend time and try to figure out how can I make this happen and try to make it as believable as possible. And so what I always do is I think of people in my life, and look, the way that I go about these things, I'm not saying it's the right way to do it. And honestly, anybody who tells you this is the only way to do things doesn't know what they're talking about.
True. Yeah.
And I just find that, like, taking lots of acting classes, I still take classes periodically, and I pick and choose the things that are right for me and the things that aren't right for me. I just throw them away. And I think it's really important for people not to get so bogged down into one way of doing things, because you have to be quick on your feet and you have to make decisions as to what's right for you. Even I know I'm kind of wandering here, but once again, you did ask the question, so I'm just kind of going off because on a tangent here, because I think it's helpful. Even with acting classes, I remember one class I walked out of. I sat in and I did not like the teacher. Well-known teacher, had really good information. And after a couple of classes, I just couldn't stand the approach that this teacher had. He would belittle people. He would break people down because he thought that if he could make you cry, he knew how to tap into your insecurities. If he could make you cry, you would think that something, there's a major breakthrough going on. I mean, to me, it just felt mean-spirited, and it felt dangerous because he was trying to play a psychotherapist in here, and he's not a psychotherapist. So anyhow, you just want to find the people to surround yourself with who can help you, and make sure that if it's not working, you can just leave it. So as far as like trying to get into my life, that would be hard because I'm a complicated guy. I mean, I'm a guy who dropped out of college. I'm probably like one of the only people I know who has dropped out of college. I don't have a degree. I have a lot of credits, but I don't have a degree. I was a musician for 7 years, a full-time musician, because I dropped out to play music,
Cool.
and that was just phenomenal. And then I thought I was going to be a physical therapist. And then I actually needed a part-time job while I was a full-time college student, taking all the class when I went back to school, taking all the classes that I avoided all my life, like all the sciences and things like that. And I met an actor and he told me what he did. And I thought, boy, that sounds like fun, a great part-time job. You know, it pays well when you get booked. You're not taking up that much time. It's not like being a waiter and you're out there, 8 hours a day and stuff. And I don't mind sharing this with you. Right as I was beginning to apply to physical therapy schools after taking all my prerequisites, I started having these dreams of being a very successful PT and being bored with my life. Because I did like 300 hours of volunteer work. I knew what the work was about. There were things about it that really excited me. Most of it was just dealing with people and helping people. That was really intriguing for me and something that I was really attracted to. But it wasn't giving me the same kind of excitement as acting was. And I decided, you know what, I want to try this for a year full time and just see what it's like. Once again, I didn't have many expectations. I just wanted to make sure that I could get work, that I could bring in some income, I could live with the unknown of being self-employed, and that it was still something that was really important to me and something that I found powerful and enjoyable. And so that's been the 39 years. So trying to play me, boy, that would take a lot of years of therapy. And
Ha. Okay, so let's do it this way then. If I wanted to, because you're talking about persistence and separating your ego, yourself from like your perception of self from the result, because you gotta put yourself out there in these interview or if in this case in the auditions, right? You have to seriously put yourself out there, and if they say no to you, a lot of people would take that as a no to you. You are not good enough. Whereas I think that something that you do, perhaps unconsciously, is you separate yourself from the role that you're playing while also integrating the two so you can play it well, but you don't allow it to say, well, it's me that's the problem. There's maybe something going on with them, or maybe it's just not what they're looking for, but I'm not the problem. It's just not the right fit for this right now. And so you got that separation, which I think is crucial when it comes to entrepreneurship, for example, because you got clients saying no to you. You got individuals, all kinds of situations, support issues, and there's a lot of ego that can get caught in the way of having success because you attach your sense of worth to the result. And I want to know how you kind of separate the two there.
Yeah. And you know, and that is, man, you really hit on something that's so important. But by the way, one thing I should state that I didn't, it was my 15th audition for House of Cards when I booked it. So yeah, I forgot to say that part of
Oh,
it.
you said it. You said
Oh, well, I said it was a
that.
14, did 14 auditions and
14.
never
Okay.
booked
Okay.
it. But the 15th is when I booked it.
I see.
So what you said is so insightful and so interesting, and it transcends acting.
Yeah.
I once got hired by an architectural company to come in because the guy knew what kind of work I did. And he wanted me to work with the architects, with the salespeople, and get them to work together in a better way. And I put together this whole program and I used a lot of the information that I use on a daily basis. And it was very successful. It was a lot of fun. Here is something that I do that really changed things for me. I'm not a negative guy. I don't walk around saying, I'm horrible, nobody likes me, I can't do anything. Look, I realize it's not a coincidence that I've booked almost 1,300 jobs, but I'm also not boasting in any way just because I'm not the greatest actor in the world. There are some things that I do well. And I know what those things are, and those are the kinds of jobs I get. But here's something that I do for every single audition, and this will help any entrepreneur, anybody who's out there trying to promote themselves, market themselves, and trying to sell something. I go into every audition, and I have really my number one goal. And this might surprise people, but my number one goal is not booking the job. Because I honestly do not think I'm going to get the job. And once again, it's not because I think I'm bad. It's just that I understand the realities. And like I said before, there are so many factors that go into getting the job and not getting it. It's not like the Olympics where whoever performs the routine the best, they're all going to get tens, you know, from all the judges. It doesn't work that way. Most of the people going in for an audition are going to give a great read. And then it comes down to things that you have absolutely no control over. So my number one goal for every single audition is to have a good time. It's a Wednesday afternoon. I get a chance to play for 3 minutes. That is fun. That's my goal. And I think another way that that is helpful, not only does it relax me, because doing auditions can be incredibly stressful. Doing the job itself, there's a lot of pressure. You've got hundreds of people, you know, crew people, you've got the directors, all these other actors, and you goof up your lines, and now everything stops. And it's like, take two, take three. So there's a lot of pressure. But I can tell you that when you go in and you're not trying to get it, not only will it relax you, it also gives you a very different presence for the casting director. Because casting directors, they're like sharks. They can smell desperation a mile away. And when they see somebody who's going in there and is thinking, hey, if I get it, great. If I don't, that's great. I'll get something else. Those are the kinds of people they want to work with. So that is my number one goal. And that is a way for me to kind of step back, not feel the pressure. And I'm not saying that certain auditions don't scare me. They do. They would never see it. And there are certain techniques that I use, a physical technique and the mental one of I'm not going to get the job that I find really, really helpful. But yeah, just going in there with that kind of frame of mind. And I think when for salespeople, when you're not trying to make the sale and you're trying to enjoy yourself and also understand what can I do to help you? I'm not trying to sell you here. What can I do to make your life easier? Booking me for this role, if I'm the right person, that's going to make your life easier because that's what they want to do. So anyhow, I think that's something that would be very helpful to a lot of different people.
Dude, yeah, you're tapping into something amazing. It's spiritual. You're detaching yourself from the result of it. You're doing it for the actual experience itself, not the result. So therefore, whatever happens is gravy. You're just going along with the flow. And there's something very powerful to that. It is spiritual at the end of the day. You're talking about something that's removing yourself from the result is, I don't know how to put it. It's necessary for when it comes to producing the right performance, because if you're too attached to the result, you're stiff. You're kind of, you have a hard time loosening up. You're feeling the pressure from everybody because you have to get the result. Otherwise, who knows what would happen. And then your survival instincts start to kick in, and there's a lion in the corner growling at you if you don't nail this acting role. You know, if I don't nail this audition, I'm gonna get my head bitten off. And it, like neurologically, it's the same systems that are being triggered as the same way as though there was a lion in the room. And so you detach yourself, you realize that regardless if I do this, the lion, there's no lion. I'm not gonna get my head bitten off. Let's just do my best to have a good time while I do it, right?
I tell you, you're very smart because
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources. And you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
I think it's cortisol. I think that it turns into the fight or flight syndrome when you start getting really nervous, and nervousness will come out in many different ways for people. I can tell you because I've worked at a lot of events where I mean, I'll be a guest speaker, and then sometimes they'll ask me to judge, and I'm watching performances. And it's really easy to see. Sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's not so subtle with people who start talking much faster because they're nervous. You know,
Right.
people who start clenching, you know, their fists, or they, you know, grab their hands together, or put their hands behind their back, and or they just start talking incessantly. And man, it's so noticeable. And once again, I want to work with somebody who I can connect with, somebody who seems like I can trust as well.
Right.
Because if I can't trust you, if I think that you're going to freak out if the situation gets rough, that's going to create problems. And for the casting director, it's going to really reflect poorly on the casting director as well. And they might not get asked to cast another project with that particular company. So anyhow, I've never really thought about it quite in that way, but yeah, that's very, very interesting.
It's fascinating, right? I mean, you're talking about it becomes how do you do it, right? Because it's very difficult to be able to realize there's no line. There's, you know, the result is irrelevant. Well, let's just have a good time, and the result will come. What will happen? It will happen. You know, what I find is when I try too hard personally, the result ends up getting screwed up because I'm, like I said, you just like you self-conscious you subconsciously sabotage yourself. There's a self-sabotaging that takes place when you're caring about the results. So it's like you're going against the grain. You're trying to control things that you can't control, you know. And like you said, if they're having a bad day or you're not wearing the right clothes, or these are all things that you can't control. And by attaching yourself and saying you must have the result, otherwise this is going to be very bad for me, then you are forgetting and you're trying to control things that you can't control. And then that's where the chafing comes in, the friction with reality.
And something you just touched on that is so interesting. When you are so consumed with the result, how can you act? How could you possibly be in character and really understand and feel what that character is going? Because that character isn't caring about booking the job. That
Right.
character has a
That's
lot of
it.
other things
And
going
that's
on.
it. Yes.
And it's not gonna work. It's
Yeah.
just not going to work if you're not in the moment, because you're so consumed with, you know, I've got a mortgage to pay, and you know, I need this job, or you know, this famous actor I'm gonna have this scene with, and this could change my career, and you
Yeah.
know, now I can start telling all my friends. Oh boy, it's draining.
So how do you get away from it, man? How do you detach yourself from the result like that? You said it took you a long time. What did you learn during that time?
Well, one of the things that I learned was that when I was result oriented, I just felt the pressure, and I didn't like the feeling of that kind of pressure. And I would walk out of auditions just feeling kind of yucky. It's like I felt like dirty. It felt like this just isn't enjoyable for me. And then, you know, I talked with some fellow actors, and you know, some things that they were saying, and that I found really helpful. They were just saying, Aaron, you've got no control over booking the job. And it kind of hit me because I used to always think, well, the better you are, then the better the chances you have of booking the job. And of course, look, you can't be horrible and expect to book the job, but it's not a matter of being better. We're all doing a good read in there, and it's all different, which kind of leads me into like one other little thing. If I'm going too far, just let me know. And that has to do with competition, because I find that sometimes actors are very competitive with each other. And once again, I'm sure this is a pretty universal thing. You have a lot of people who are selling different products, and they can feel very competitive with each other. And what I learned is there is no competition. I'm not competing with anybody. I'm not saying that because I think I'm so great. I'm saying that because we all have different life experiences. And those life experiences will shade what we do in the audition. And so, and even like when I do workshops or private mentoring, sometimes people have said to me, do you feel uncomfortable at all about sharing, let's say auditioning techniques with people? Because, now I'm going to learn these things and I might be able to book the job and you might not get it if we're out on the same audition. And what I always say is, you're right. You might book the job and I might not get it. And that's okay. It really is. Because apparently the job wasn't right for me. It just, for whatever reason, it wasn't meant for me to get that particular job. And I find that when I surround myself with more like-minded people who truly try to help each other, people who are kind to each other and share information, to me, that's a much better way for me to not only run my business, but it's a much better way to live. Because if you're out there and constantly, eyeing other people, at the audition and thinking, oh, well, what are they doing? Or, I wonder what they're, how they're going to present, at the audition, and you start comparing it. Once again, it goes back to something that you had touched on that is just so crucial. You're out of the moment at that point. Your head is in a very different place. So anyhow, I think it's really important, at least for me, not to compete with anybody else, because none of us have any competition. Even for the, like I used to, they don't have them that much anymore because it's all remote. But I would go to what's called a go-see in New York. It's an audition for models. And they might be looking for a, I don't know, a Caucasian doctor for this one particular print job, modeling job. And I'm not exaggerating. Sometimes they would cast this thing over 2 days. They're seeing hundreds of people. We all look like Caucasian doctors, and it's like, you can't, sit there and think about it. Look, if what I did is something they're looking for, great. And if it's not, that's great. That's fine. Hopefully, and the same with an audition. Hopefully, it's a great way for me to introduce myself to a new casting director. They're going to hopefully like what I did. If I'm not right for it, that's fine. But maybe they will think of me, which does happen, for another project. I mean, why wouldn't they? They liked what I did. I just wasn't the perfect match for this one.
But how do you get there, man? It's difficult because it took you a long time, right? So
It did.
if you were to teach me, for example, how to do that, to give up on the result and stay focused in the moment,
Okay. So the first thing,
how would I do
okay, so
it?
you're out there selling something. First thing I would tell you is you're not going to sell it.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. 100% disagree with that because this is the reason for that. And I hope we can have some banter
Oh,
here.
absolutely. Yeah, I'd love
Perfect.
to.
Okay, because when I'm selling something, it's crucial for me to go into the state of mind where they are going to buy it. Because people will, there was an experiment with yogurt, for example, and the bacteria within the yogurt were fed something that they liked. Let's picture a tray of yogurt. They split it in half. One side was given food that the bacteria liked. One side wasn't. And the side that was given the food, the side that wasn't given the food was experiencing anxiety. They were feeling even though technically they couldn't see, they could feel that there was that separate that there was something wrong, right? And so I look at that when it comes to selling is I'm trying to put myself in the state of mind where 100% they will buy because they can feel that energy the same way the yogurt could feel the energy whatever that is. So I feel like if I put myself in a position where they are going to buy, then they're more likely to feel, okay, so this person's certain about this. I should be certain about this too, all unconsciously. But that's how I look at the selling thing.
Okay, great. And I'm glad we're having this discussion. So, some actors I know like to manifest. They're auditioning for a movie. They see themselves walking down, the red carpet. They're going to go up. They're going to win an Academy Award. They see the speech. They know the speech. I tried that a couple of times. It just was not for me. With what you're talking about, and actually, it was funny. This is some of the things I was talking about with this architectural company. Instead of trying to sell it, tell them how you can help them.
Or
So,
ask how they need help, first of all, then see if you can
yeah, of
position what you're
course.
selling around that. So you're not just
Right.
guessing what
Well,
they help with, what they need
these
help with,
people,
right?
yeah. Well, I guess for these people, they already knew what the project was.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're just walking in cold and have to ask, well, what can I do for you? They already had the information because they were already sent drawings. They knew exactly what was needed. So their mindset was not, I'm going to sell you. Their mindset was, I'm going to help you.
Yes, and people
This
feel that
is,
the same way.
yeah, and this is how I can help you. I can help you by doing this, 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 and this. If a sale happens, great. I think
Right.
it will, it might,
Yeah, it goes back to that.
but it wasn't going in thinking I'm going to sell. Because if you, once again, this is just for me, and apparently it works really well for you. So maybe my theory doesn't work universally. But I think it for people who go in and just sell, I think a lot of times people don't want to be sold.
Yeah, nobody
Now,
likes to be sold, but people love to buy because they want to solve problems, right? I mean, buy stuff on Amazon. It's like, ooh, it comes in. You're all excited. You like buying stuff, but nobody likes being sold. So the question
right.
becomes, how do you sell without selling? And that's
Because you
where
tell
mastery comes in.
them how you can help them. You tell them how your product will solve their problems, how it's going to benefit them. That's the mindset of sharing with them all the benefits of what your product can do for them, which is different than I'm going to sell you. So I don't know if I brought you over to my side and you're still on a different cabin, which is cool.
It's I like the aspect of detaching yourself from the result, but for me to have an effective sales conversation, I go in as they're going to buy this thing. Now, that doesn't necessarily say that I'm going to sell them this thing. I'm saying they're going to buy it. And so there is a differentiation there, because if you go in trying to like desperately to sell them something, then you're focused on the result again. But if I'm saying they're going to buy something, I move towards that. But then if they veer off, if it's not a good fit, I'm not attached to that result, because I wasn't attaching myself to the sales situation. I was just going with the flow and experiencing a conversation with them, seeing if
Yeah.
I can help them or not. And if I can help them, then that's when we move forward with, okay, give me the credit card, baby. Let's get this
Hey,
started.
but I would be curious, and I know you probably wouldn't try it just because it's too important of a thing for you, but I would be curious if you actually went in there without trying to get them to buy, but sell them on how this will help them.
Or
I wonder
talk
if
to them about how it'll help them instead of sell. Yeah, right.
yeah,
Yeah,
talk to them.
first of all, you got to ask and find out. So you're like, a lot of people would just guess, like, because they'll project their own desires onto the prospect, right? So if they like the fact that the phone is red, it's got a glass backing, it's got an LCD screen with who knows what nits and whatever, they like all of these features. So they're trying to push the features and even the benefits that they would like to be told onto them. But everybody's different. So what I like to do is, first of all, explore their decision-making process, and then see if I can structure my offer as a direct match with how they're already comfortable with making decisions.
And it's also interesting. So when I'm starting a private session with somebody, the very first thing, well, not the very first thing, but as we're about to get started, I mean, I might say hello first, but one of the things I'm going to ask is, hey, what do you need help with? What can I do to help you? Because I don't want to presume to know. I probably do know, especially if somebody's getting started, and I can go down a whole long list of, yeah, you need to know about, headshots and resumes and finding agents and auditioning. And I know those are probably the things, but I don't want to presume to know that. And so I'll ask. And then once I start hearing from the person, then that gives me a much better way to help them. And sometimes it's not even so much the answer, it's the way they respond. And I will learn a lot from that. And then I will make sure that whatever I do is going to be created specifically for that person. I will talk very differently to different people, just depending on who they are. And I'm sure you as well, when you are, selling, promoting a product, in some ways you do have to be a therapist. In some ways you are the sociologist because you need to get a feel not only of the situation, but also who that person is. And you will probably, because I'm sure you're great at it, you know very quickly how to approach the person, what their pressure points are, what things that you can touch on, maybe some things you want to stay away from in a conversation. Do they like talking about their family? Do they hate their family? So I'm staying away from
Am
them.
I going to associate their hatred with their family with what I'm trying to sell them? You got to be careful, right? One person will love it, and the other person is, I think we're tapping into something really cool here, man. What we're tapping into, and this goes exactly in direct alignment with what you do, is when I sell something, I'm doing my best to put myself in their role. I don't know if you want to look at it as acting, because I'm genuinely having empathy and moving myself into their position so I can do my best, not always the greatest, because it's difficult to really understand and feel another person's reality. But that's what I'm trying to do. I'll elicit the reality and try to step into it so I can see how they would make decisions, and then structure or position my offer as what a natural fit would be to how they're used to making decisions. So one of the things I'll do is I'll ask, last time you bought something like this, how did you know it made sense to do this? And what I'm doing is I'm eliciting an answer that will allow me to step into their role. The same way that you step into a role when you go to act, there's a correlation there that is something that I think we're tapping into.
Oh,
You see what I mean?
absolutely. Yeah, because what you do is, and actually, in some ways, your job might be harder than mine. I've got time to prepare.
Ah, yes. I do it on the fly.
You
Which
have
I
to do
love.
it. You have to do it with total improv. And what you have to do is observe, and you create a different character every time you're meeting with somebody.
Yes.
And so that's a
Interesting.
much more difficult situation. And you don't have the director in case things are not necessarily heading in the right direction. Okay, cut. So
True.
Kyle, hey, so Kyle, let's talk about this for a second. I think maybe you're kind of hitting the guy maybe just a little bit too hard. So I tell you what, let's try this one again and maybe just back off a little bit and
We'll start at the
yeah,
top.
let's
It
start
doesn't
off there. All
happen.
right, take two.
But we have exactly right. But we have these internal barometers, the internal director that is guiding the way. So if I say something that, and this isn't verbal a lot of the time, a lot of the time it's very nuanced physiological changes that you'll watch take place. And it's almost like I don't realize it consciously. It's this is mostly what we're talking about is a completely unconscious process that takes
Sure.
place without us realizing. Because I don't go into it thinking how I'm going to be this person when I, but unconsciously, because if you try to do that consciously, it's impossible. But the unconscious is infinitely powerful. We're able to step into the shared space that we have in the grand scheme of things, the grandest scheme of things. I aim for to put myself in their position, their viewpoint, their consciousness, and see the world from their point of view. But you
And
can't do it consciously.
you've got to be able to dance quickly because you might be heading in one direction and then all of a sudden you just feel, and like you were saying, it's not a conscious thing, you just feel it.
It's the yogurt.
And you have to pick, yeah, and all of a sudden you have to kind of make a slight pivot and maybe you have to head at something in a different direction because you just asked this person a question and they're telling you something, and you planned on following up with it. I don't think that's going to work. So let me shift over. Maybe I can grab this person's attention in another way, or convince the person from a different angle. So, man, you are doing so many different, like, I'm curious, like, are you exhausted when you come out of out of these meetings?
Ah, it's a good question. I don't think that I'm any more exhausted than a therapist would be if they were helping a client. There is a level of exhaustion there for sure. Even in these interviews, I'm doing the exact same thing because what I'm trying to do is elicit your model of reality so I can understand the way you do things so that other people watching or listening will be able to do the same things as well. This time we went a little bit meta because we're talking about the role that we're playing, the egoic structure that we're stepping into. I don't know how to put it. I mean, you can put it all kinds of scientific jargon around it, but what we're talking about is personas that we're shifting unconsciously to match and mirror other people so that eventually you can lead them. This is so interesting. You model somebody a couple of moves, a couple of times, and then you'll be able to start leading them. For example, if somebody takes a drink every time you're out to dinner, you take a drink with them, and you, the next thing you know, you take a drink and they take a drink because you've been modeling them without them realizing consciously. But then you're able to start leading because you've got that rapport, that unconscious alignment at that moment. And it is rapport, I guess. And I guess when you're trying to act in a situation, you're trying to step into that role, that person, because when you talk about it, you said she's the wife's the president's wife, the mother of the
The
president's
mother.
wife. Yeah, and I'm thinking like he is so immersed in this role. You actually are thinking about the character's histories. You're not looking at it as a character, but you're stepped into this reality, which is this character that you're playing, the caretaker, which is like you're doing something phenomenal. You're taking on, you're forgetting your life and stepping into another life. That's so cool.
Well, and something else that I did, and actually, when I finish sharing this with you, I'd be curious to hear what you do. So, since we're just talking about this show, House of Cards, one of the things that I felt like I needed to do, because I never met Ellen Burstyn before in my life, but I had to really care about her, I had to really love her and feel protective of her. So, something that I did was I made sure that I spent time with her prior to our scenes being shot. So we would have meals together. And I'm just asking her, because her life is much more interesting than mine. I would just ask her millions of questions, you know, getting started and what she did and how she ended up, you know, where she ended up. And all of a sudden, I start feeling this connection and this protectiveness of her. And so, and without that, I don't think it would have worked. So I'm curious, like when you go in, and for other, maybe you can't speak for other people in your position, like do you research the person ahead of time so you
Zero.
know? No.
Zero, absolutely nothing. So there's an organic unfolding that would happen as the same way I met them at a coffee shop. I actually insist on zero research because that way the research would get in the way because one person knows the other person, but the other person doesn't know them. So there's already a kind of dichotomy there, and you have to bring that into union. Whereas with no research, you're both on the same page, and it goes smoother, I find. So yeah, zero research. It's all on the fly, which is
So
fun.
even like if you found out, because you had mentioned you like to ski. So if you know, I don't know, went on LinkedIn or something and found this person you're going to be meeting with tomorrow, big skier, you don't think that kind of information would be helpful? Not that you would come in and say, oh, I know that you like, but just casually toss it out there. Yeah, I'm going to be you know, skiing this, you know, this weekend. You have any plan? Do you like doing this? Not even that either. You don't like
Well,
doing that?
my company Prognostic AI does exactly that, which is interesting because what it does is it analyzes an individual's psyche based on writing or social media profiles or whatever, and is able to give you language patterns of what they're most likely to respond to because it's a language that they use. But really, that's to be used in marketing where you're, for me anyways, when I'm using a one-to-many platform. When it comes to one-on-one, yeah, it might help to build rapport, but I don't need that help. I find that, I mean, other people might, but for me, it comes so naturally that I'm able to build rapport and not have to have that that artificial, like, oh, let's kind of manipulate him into liking me because we both like skiing. You know what I mean? That's maybe a negative way of putting it, but that's a way to think about it, is you were starting off at a different level of them. And so, yeah, no, man, zero research going in whatsoever. Interesting question though. One that I haven't been asked before. Zero research. No, I insist upon it. Yeah.
That's cool. And I guess, for somebody like you, and maybe I don't know if you're unique in that way, but maybe because of the skills that you have developed, that you are able to really connect with people very quickly,
Yeah.
and you prefer to do things more organically that way, and you will get those results. It's just a matter of doing it organically, which is something that you prefer, it sounds like.
Yeah, man. And everybody's different, right? It's not gonna, I'm not saying I'm some kind of superhero who only is the only one that has this power. I mean, there are lots, but everybody has to find their own style. And I was lucky enough to stumble upon mine as a kid, man. It's always been natural to me. So I'm lucky and I get to express it in this podcast, which I'm grateful for. So, man, dude, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything else you want to add before we kick this off?
I was just going to say, if people would like to get more information about the industry, they can just go to my website, howtoactandmodel.com, and models MODEL. I think you spell it MODLE.
Oh,
In Canada, I think in Canada, no, for some
nope.
reason I thought, I don't know why I thought in Canada it was MODLE. But anyhow, it's howtoactandmodel.com, and you can get on my mailing list. And yeah, if for anybody who has any questions at all about either breaking into the industry, always feel free to reach out. There's a contact button there, because I know what it's like to get started. It can be very hard. People like myself spent years doing things that I didn't need to do, spent money I didn't need to spend, and it took me a while to figure things out. So if I can help other people avoid that, just reach out to me. I'm more than happy to help.
Perfect, man. I love it. So, dude, thank you so much. And Aaron, it's been a pleasure. We explored some interesting territory today, so I'm grateful for that. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks, Kyle. This was a lot of fun. I've never done anything quite like this in an interview before. So, yeah, this was cool.
Cool, man. I'm glad you liked it. I had fun too. So yeah, we'll keep in touch, man. And thank you again for being on. It's serious pleasure. It was fun.
Thanks, man. See ya.
Ciao.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.